Hello and welcome to Keyframe, the animation podcast, part of the Geek Show Network. How's everybody doing? My name is Mark, and with me is Rob.
Hello.
And Tucky. Tucky is obviously very excited. He's got some very exciting animation to review later on.
Had to bring it down, didn't you? He's too perky. Let's put him down and in his place.
I thought that was why you were perky.
No. I'm a mixture of anesthesia and chocolate. Because I discovered white chocolate Snickers at B&M's today.
I've been shopping, so it's all my feet hurt. We've got news, starting with the very, very bizarre. Tucky, remember a couple of weeks ago, you covered the Scooby-Doo Supernatural crossover episode, and I went, what the huh?
Yeah, I can remember it pretty well. It was actually decent, so...
Yeah, and I was kind of very, very confused and mildly bemused at the prospect of a Supernatural Scooby-Doo crossover in the first place. And the fact that it happened just made me even more confused. And so I'm just kind of, yeah. Well, take that one step further and imagine two of the characters from the Scooby-Doo gang having their own live-action origin story movie.
Ooh, is it Fred and Shaggy in 1969 doing pot?
No. No, because that movie already exists, and I believe it goes under the pseudonym of Cheech and Chong.
I was going to say Cheech and Chong. Say, Scoo, this cheeseburger's whack, man.
No. It's actually Daphne and Velma. We've had live-action Scooby-Doo before. It was Freddie Prinze Jr. and Sarah Jessica Parker, wasn't it?
Yes.
The best version I saw was Wing Commander and Buffy in the same movie. So, anyway, Daphne and Velma is another live-action Scooby-Doo thing about Daphne and Velma and how they meet and stuff like that.
It seems like they're doing the Star Wars thing where they go back, pick one character or two characters, do a whole story or whole movie on them. It just seems like this is like Scooby-Doo, Daphne and Velma's story.
Yeah, and it's two Sarahs in this as well. This is going to get really confusing. Sarah Jeffrey and Sarah Gilman are going to play Daphne and Velma respectively, right?
That must have been great to direct. Sarah, what? No, other Sarah. Yeah. What?
this is the synopsis for it. State-of-the-art robots and high-tech gadgets are common sights at Ridge Valley High, an innovative centre of learning for some of the brightest minds in the country, including new transfer student, the bright and optimistic Daphne Blake, played by Sarah Jeffrey, who is excited to finally go to school with her online bestie, the whip-smart and analytical Velma Dinkley. Whip-smart, eh?
Say that's like mentioned anywhere, that kind of word.
Exactly. But not everything is as innocent as it seems, as mysterious disappearances begin to plague the top-performing students on campus. Once cheery and full of life, kids now appear in a zombified state, lifeless and shells of themselves. Can Daphne
School?
Yeah.
That's just what school does to you?
Yep. Can Daphne and Velma learn to work together and save the students, or will they become the next victims? Get ready for thrills and laughs as we follow the first adventures of Mystery Inc.'s fierce female duo. There's nothing fierce about Daphne and Velma. I know this because I've watched Scooby-Doo and all they do is run a lot. Run away a lot, I should say.
One drops her glasses a lot and the other one's like, oh no, ditzy, run away.
Yeah. This was always my problem with the live-action Scooby-Doo movies. I'm like, you're Buffy. You kill vampires. These things are nothing to you.
See, one thing, watching the trailer, one thing that pops to mind is the advancement of technology. Now, this is set before Scooby-Doo, supposedly, before, like, Mystery Inc. became, like, a bunch of teenagers getting stoned in a van.
Yeah.
So the height of technology, their technology is more advanced. Yeah, they still go to old mansions. Now, if you've ever been to, like, America, you know, you'll know that any historical buildings already been knocked down and Donald Trump's built a skyscraper on it. Mm. And this is the thing. It's like, with that kind of technical advancement, where the hell are they finding all these haunted mansions in later life?
Oh, no. Yeah, that's true. But have you scrolled down to the poster?
Oh, the school lockers and lights.
Yeah.
She's using a smartphone. Don't know what she's doing. Looks like she's taking a selfie.
No, no. See, I just want to point out, on the poster, Velma looks remarkably like Amy Farrah Fowler.
Hi.
To be honest, when I was watching the trailer, that was the kind of humour that I was getting from it. It was very much like the Big Bang Theory.
Except for the fact that Amy Farrah Fowler is probably the best character in Big Bang Theory.
It's not really much of a challenge.
It's not really much of a challenge, but the thing is, Mayim Bialik used to play the role of Blossom, and she's probably the one with the most experience playing the oddball character, I suppose. And that's why she gets great lines like, go to the cadaver lab and play a real-life operation.
So basically it's...
the nose doesn't light up, but the electricity makes the leg kick a lot.
So basically the story is Amy Farrah Fowler and Penny are now going to team up to find out who is cyber-converting all of these children into zombies or whatever.
Oh, God, you actually hit the nail on the head.
I mean, I'm not saying it's a Doctor Who story, but it's a Doctor Who story.
I mean, you mentioned it before, the Sarah Jane Adventures or Mysteries or whatever the heck they called it. You expect the Slovene to be behind it all. What if they got to the end and the mystery was solved and it turns out that modern day, like, you know, over-sexualization of things, increase in fast food consumption, laziness, you know, normal things are really what turning kids into zombies and nothing supernatural at all.
I think it's going to be the chips. That's what it wasn't Doctor Who. Actually, oh, no, they don't have chips in America, do they? It'll be the French fries.
No. You should call them chips because then you never know whether it's the electronic kind or the potato kind. Or maybe
that brings it back round to Buffy because Anthony Head was the one who was serving the chips to the kids.
Yes, he was.
Exactly.
See?
Full circle.
Anyway, moving on to Striker Force 7. It's a new project that Graphic India and VMS Communications are making. It's a new sci-fi athletics / superhero multi-platform property. Guess who stars in it?
We know who stars in it.
I just want you guys to come up with
listener reaction.
Yeah.
Is it Giggsy?
No, it's not Ryan Giggs.
Is it Eric Cantona?
No, it's not Alan Shearer either.
Just go through Man United, Alex Ferguson's best hits.
No. Cristiano Ronaldo, he's getting animated for this project. And there is actually a picture on that page of Cristiano Ronaldo at the front.
Actually, thinking about Cristiano Ronaldo is also Alex Ferguson's greatest hits as well.
Yeah. The thing is, it's actually called, the poster actually says Cristiano Ronaldo's Striker Force 7. And I mean, one of them looks like a weird crossover between Harley Quinn and Tank Girl, or rather just a Tank Girl in like a plug suit with a glowing baseball
bat. I'm looking, one of them's a hammerhead shark.
Yeah.
One of them's got like half a basketball with an at sign on.
Yeah. One of them has giant hands. One of them has what look to be angel / butterfly wings, but they look like they're drawn on. One of them is wearing what looks like a woolly hat with horns and pom-poms.
Oh, hang on, it sounds incredibly 90s. It sounds like, you know those cheesy 90s.
Oh, what was that?
The Hurricanes.
Was that the one where it was like a sci-fi football show?
Yeah, well, it was international players from all around the world joined together to create the Hurricanes. It was like them Benetton ads where like every race, color, religion, and everything.
And they had to go out and play. They had to go out and play intergalactic football.
It wasn't intergalactic. They played some team in green where the manager was like Donald Trump or something.
No, because there was a sci-fi cartoon series about football, Galactic Football. That was what it was called.
Oh, that French one.
Yeah, that's the one I'm talking about.
It was a more updated version of the Hurricanes.
Yeah, but it was like intergalactic, wasn't it?
So, my question is, I mean, I'm not as into sports as other people are, but who is this for? Because Is Ronaldo still the big name he used to be like 10 yes. years ago?
Yes, he's actually even bigger now.
He's bigger.
Anybody who plays FIFA will tell you Cristiano Ronaldo's the one to have on your team.
Yeah. I'm just a bit concerned about the placement of that glowing ball on the picture.
Ronaldo's glowing balls. How much was he paid to take them?
Probably a lot. The thing is, Cristiano Ronaldo does not come cheap. He's amazing in the fact that he's managed to build a brand around himself.
Well,
I think he's took tips off David Beckham as well. Have you not seen the latest Deadpool 2 trailer with David Beckham in?
Of course he's taken tips off Beckham. He's probably been on the phone to Beckham going, oh, great, David, what should I do here? David Beckham's a lot smarter than people give him credit for, by the way.
Ridiculously smarter.
Anyway, according to Cristiano Ronaldo, this is quote from him, I have always been a fan of superheroes and I'm thrilled to help create this new animated series. In the same way football connects cultures and people around the world, I believe great animated characters and heroes can do the same, and that's why I am excited to bring together these passions of football and superheroes through this project and share it with my fans. Really? And
like so, hell did he say
no, no,
that?
No. All I'm saying is, really? And the current popularity of superheroes had nothing to do with it?
Yeah, Christian, the Marvel Avengers, they're all the rage. Do you want to be the football Avengers? Yes, go on. All the money. It's not like he needs it. I think he's richer than most countries. I think he runs a bigger surplus than the whole UK.
Possibly.
I'm not even joking about that. He's stupidly wealthy. Very charitable as well, though.
So what do you guys think of Striker Force 7?
Well, it's World Cup season, so we're going to see a lot more sports animation stuff. Whether this gets released over the World Cup, different thing.
I think if they don't have it over the World Cup, they'll try and get it out towards the end to kind of keep on that hype train.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Don't forget it's a multi-platform property, which means it's going to have a cartoon series, it's going to have comics, it's going to have books, games, and digital content.
So it's basically Ben 10, but it's going to be CR7.
Well, it's not going to be CR7. It's going to be SF7.
Street Fighter 7.
No, it's going to be SF7 starring CR7.
Well, no, just looking at the poster, they say multi-platform. I think it's multi-sports because you've got the hockey stick shark head guy, the basketball head at guy.
The baseball bat tank girl.
Yeah. I don't know what the wings are. Maybe she's some kind of long jumper.
I want to know what the guy with the glasses and the horns is all about. Is he like supposed to be some weird Eddie the Eagle type character?
Yeah, or curling. He seems like it'd be a crap winter sport though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and the guy with the giant hands, is he the goalkeeper?
Wagonlet guy's handball.
Is he handball, is he? Or is he goalkeeper?
Nah, he's not goalkeeper because Cristiano Ronaldo's got the soccer/football angle. It seems like they're trying to go for all sports.
So are these all ball sports then?
Yeah, by the looks of it. So, oh crap, what's balls in? maybe lacrosse?
Could they not just call this Cristiano Ronaldo's ball sports?
That's a very specific team, like, isn't it?
Yeah.
We need to assemble a team of sports. Sorry, Hulk Hogan. You can't be a part of it.
He gets used to hearing that these days.
Yeah. Mike Tyson, we don't want you. I mean, I know a wrestler and a boxer, they might be pretty useful in a fighting situation, but this lad over here, he can chuck a ball.
You know for a fact Hogan is going to turn around and say, I'm good at handling balls. Like, no, not that kind of Hogan.
We've been through this with Gorka already, Hogan. It's not going to end well again.
Yes. Anyway, moving on from there, to the evil which is going to be unleashed upon us again. Peter Rabbit gets a sequel.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of expected this to happen. I mean, it was popular, and from all accounts, it did do well at the box office. So, I mean, it was to be expected that it was going to happen.
Yeah, we talked about this on Literary Loitering. Even the guy who wrote the biography of Beatrix Potter has said that she would have been appalled at the depiction of Peter Rabbit as a bully and potential murderer. Because the guy, no, seriously, the farmer is allergic to blueberries. So what does he do? He tries to kill him by feeding him blueberries. That's attempted murder. Are you saying that's okay for kids to learn? Are you James Corden?
It's James Corden. I mean, as long as he gets paid at the end of the day. I don't know, with all of the stupid stuff and the most pointless stuff, like getting released and all of these weird announcements, it's just like having another Peter Rabbit just kind of like, yeah, just do what you want now. I'll just kind of give up with you.
Yeah. just stick Stokes 2 on the end of that as well.
That was my exact feelings the moment I saw the trailer for The Boss Baby. I just gave up. I just said, no, I'm done. You do what you want. You just lead people on this garden path of apocalyptic proportions and teach them all sorts of stuff like how to be a snowflake and stuff like that and just leave me the hell alone. I'll be over here surviving the apocalypse. You guys could just bury your heads in the sand.
It was still considered better than A Silent Voice.
Yeah, don't even talk to me about that. Just no.
We're segueing into this. Are we going
yes,
to segue?
Yes, yes. I'm setting it up for you here. I want to stop talking. I want you to jump in.
Oh, so, Boss Baby. Speaking of Boss Baby.
Yes.
Netflix decided, you know what, Boss Baby, it's got an Oscar nomination. It's like Alec Baldwin's like greatest masterpiece.
No, it's not. His impression of Donald Trump. His impression of Donald Trump was his greatest.
Yeah, but didn't get him an Oscar nomination, though, did it?
It should have. Him and Streep. Between him and Streep, they should have had their own Oscar category.
Oh, she was fun. But sticking on point on topic, Netflix, after praising them so much for things like Aggretsuko and all the other anime stuff they've released, they decided to go and say, well, you know what? We'll work a mini Boss Baby series, sort of.
And I like the way that you're not too sure what it is.
I am not. The thing is, like, I would not have given this the light of day if my son hadn't been addicted to Boss Baby. And the thing was, we took him to see it, and he loved it, and then he saw on YouTube people remixing Boss Baby to fart noises, which seems about like the kind of level that they're trying to hit.
Yeah,
and he loved it, and then Garrett, on Netflix, he sees Boss Baby, and bang, I'm stuck watching it.
It's Gareth, I'm assuming, you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Alexis has more class.
Yeah, and how old is Gareth now?
Don't quote us on this, but 5? 6? After the turn 3, you're kind of just like, no, well, I've got the one life now.
Time to go out, get a job.
As long as I remember it's the birthday, I don't have to remember the number. I just know when they turn 16, I've got to be that typical dad who asks for rent and then kicks them out, makes them homeless, you know, the proper British father.
I would find it hilarious if on Gareth's 11th birthday, you gave him a birthday card that said 65. Anyway.
But like I say, Gareth is, he's like the young, he's not quite like a young adult. He's not quite a toddler. He's that annoying stage where he puts rocks in his mouth to impress friends.
Oh, so 8 then.
he's that age. And he likes the toilet humor. He likes the... it's not really a critically acclaimed piece of artwork by no means. I mean, what was it? DreamWorks that did the animation?
Yes.
It's kind of... The best way I would describe it, it's like bog standard Poundland straight-to-DVD quality kind of movie.
That's
It's kind of funny. It's got some subpar stars in. You'd watch it if you're forced to, and you wouldn't really go out your way to watch it. And for them to do the series and continue on for that, especially because Netflix doesn't have like the big Hollywood power, so obviously the majority of the voices have changed to someone who sounds similar but isn't the same.
Yeah.
You know when they do that? When they did... Oh, what was it? The Curious George, the monkey. When they did the movie of that, and Will Ferrell was like the man in the yellow hat, and then they did the TV series.
Yeah.
And you got the same feeling with Boss Baby for Netflix. And I think it's like 10, 12, I don't know, it felt like 2 years worth of episodes. And the story from the movie is babies versus dogs. So they've obviously went with a natural progression of it, and it's now babies versus cats. And it's crap.
So I'm just trying to figure something out. Babies versus dogs, I can understand, both vying for the attention of the parents. But babies versus cats just doesn't work as an idea because...
Well, this cats... is the thing, because the whole background, Boss Baby is part of like Boss Corp, which is this disembodied floating office in the clouds where apparently babies are made, but they're kind of not made. Unless there's like some kind of like closet where they've got two people just humping each other relentlessly. Like one of them, a conveyor belt of human birth.
Is this?
It's kind of sick when you think about it. They must have a factory of people humping just to conceive. Ugh.
Is this kind of like Cars where nobody questions where who built the cars?
Yeah, it's kind of like that. If I was going to be cynical, I'd say they don't need a factory. They just go to an area that's in desperate need of regeneration.
And give out free tequila.
Yes. Political.
The Boss Baby series, it runs on the narrative, like he's with his family now, as like they just kind of like there was the conflict between like the lad, can't remember his name, don't give a toss, and the Boss Baby. But they had new characters in. He's still got his field team of the little sassy girl, Fat Baby, and the triplets, which have more charisma than the whole movie.
I want to ask a question. Is the Boss Baby's title an affectation? Is it a title?
I think it's like, an actual managerial position. He is Boss Baby.
You're saying he is Boss Baby, but I'm confused as to whether it's a title or whether it's his actual name. Is it like his first name is Boss and his surname is Baby? So when he grows up, you'd call him Mr. Baby?
I think so, but it's one of these things because I don't know how babies make profit for a start. Because he goes out on this thing and the premise of the plot is that apparently cats have got this subvert, evil, underworld plan to take over and make babies look bad. So it's like a PR kind of thing. Cats are trying to make babies look bad. Babies like, oh no, it'll hurt our reputation and nobody will want a baby.
So it's basically the plot from Cats and Dogs then?
Yeah, it's only about Jeff Goldblum trying to create the cure for being allergic to dogs. And that ninja cat who leaves a turd.
Yes.
On the floor.
But, no, it's a furball.
So I remember that movie pretty well.
it's a furball, not but yet tiny this, puppy.
This Boss Baby, they introduce new characters. They've got the Mega Fat CEO Baby. I don't know if that's his title or whatever, but he's always trying to throw a spanner in the works, and he's got a very German accent, like you know the typical stereotypical like, "Yeah, I'm German, yeah." Oh, it's a little bit camp, but I'm not really camp. I'm a very serious German, yeah?
Isn't he?
That kind of thing.
Isn't that just that little fat kid who goes to Bart's school in The Simpsons?
Yeah, it's basically that.
Was it Gunther, was it?
Gunther, put in a stroller. And I don't know how to describe this anymore. I'm not going to recommend it to the listeners. Honestly, I'm not. I'm just trying to get through it with describing it as best I can. Like, it exists. This is what it's made of. And I'm hoping my description will actually like, you know, well, that's enough. That's your curiosity piqued. Bugger that. But the only amendable thing that I can think of is that they give the fat bodyguard baby a voice in this one. And it's the voice of Cleveland Brown Jr. from obviously Family Guy and Cleveland Show. And it's the same like high pitched fat kid voice because they must have just watched like the Cleveland Show and went, oh, fat kid with a high voice. Let's stick him in here. DreamWorks will love that. Netflix would love it. Everyone who watches it would love it. I liked it. Didn't love it. But it's not something you really want to watch. You don't want to subjugate yourself to that kind of thing because it's just really crap. I know it's not for my age group. I'm like, you know, 30 odd year old bloke. Obviously, I'm not going to go out of my way to watch Boss Baby, but as an animated piece, it's poor, it's predictable. It's one of them add-on thing. If Boss Baby ever gets a school movie, I hope that like, this series has killed that. That's the only thing I can think like where we can come out winners here as humanity.
For some reason I thought they'd already actually announced that it was getting a sequel.
Oh, fudge no. I will, you know, it's one of them things like, yeah, I probably would go down to like this, actually pay for train fare, plane fare, whatever. I'd bunk with Steve Martin in a car and I'd gone there and I'd actually protest in person if this was given a sequel movie. Because there's better intellectual properties out there which deserve so much more attention and so much more money poured into it than Boss Baby.
Hold the phone. Who said you get to play the John Candy role?
Yeah, I've got to. I'm the fat guy.
I'll have
and I mess around. Quite a bit.
I was going to say, I'll have you know, I also resemble that remark.
I miss John Candy.
So do I.
We all do, Tucky. We all do.
Yeah, but
people call us Uncle Tuck now. I've just became an uncle for like the fifth time or something.
Well, only the fifth time. You got some catching up to do, Tucky.
No, I know that, but I mean, like oh, it's Uncle Tuck. Oh, like Uncle Booker. Oh, he flips giant pancakes. I'm like, you smarmy bastards. And I'm already Uncle Tuck, but Uncle Bucket. I don't have a car that backfires.
Do you lock people up in your trunk and then open it and just start using a drill?
Cordless drill.
Cordless drill and laughing at them.
No comment.
That's how he gets people into SunnyCon.
No, we don't pay thousands factors. I just get you in a boat and drill you.
That's a totally different convention.
Considering there's over 5,000 people, I do a lot of drilling.
No, but he's all exhausted that weekend.
Tucky's best Sergeant Major skit. Anyway.
Go on, you've got better things to talk about than this. Boss Baby, don't watch it. Next.
Yes, next. Yeah, it's interesting that I mentioned the Sergeant Major bit, because we've got some more military-type stuff. Ghost in the Shell, Standalone Complex, second gig. Now, I did the first Standalone Complex last week, and so this week is actually second gig. And this is actually very different. In terms of the actual format, it's very much the same as the original Standalone Complex. There are two sections. There is the Standalone and the Complex. And the Complex is actually the overarching storyline, whereas the Standalone are just individual episodes, or sometimes there's some interconnected episodes in this, but most of the time they're just standalone episodes that kind of intercut with the Complex storyline. The first Standalone Complex was all about the Laughing Man, and there were a lot of political machinations and stuff like that, a lot of cybercrime, all sorts of things like that. And that still stays in this, only this time the stakes are a lot higher. The fight is actually taken to Section 9 in a way that I haven't really seen outside of the Patlabor movies, and this was the biggest surprise for me with Standalone Complex second gig. Now you've got a group calling themselves the Individual 11. They've begun committing acts of terror across Japan, and Section 9 have been tasked with investigating the new menace along with various other groups from the Japanese government. But the problem is those groups from the Japanese government don't really like each other, and so you have this really interesting byplay between the different sections of law enforcement and the military in Japan, or in Japan at this time. You know, you've got leading members of the Cabinet Intelligence Service getting involved. Goda Kazundo, for example, he's one of the leading characters in this. And ultimately you find out that one of the guys that's really heavily involved in this is a guy called Hideo Kuze. And he's suspected as being the leader of the Individual 11. And there's an interesting aspect to this, because when you look at the live-action Ghost in the Shell movie, did you notice this, Tucky? You know the live-action Ghost in the Shell movie, you know the guy who is like the major in Ghost in the Shell?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I was watching that film and I thought, his character is kind of modelled on Ro, the leader of the Individual 11, Kuze Hideo.
I thought he was, wasn't he?
He was modelled heavily on him. They took a lot from second gig to make that character.
Oh, there was a well-researched movie. One of the things that doesn't really get credit for.
Yeah. I wrote a review for Standalone Complex and second gig years ago. I think it was, it's like 9 years ago I wrote it. And when I wrote that review, I opened it with a line from Franz Kafka. Life without truth is not possible. Truth is perhaps life itself. And I chose that line because it actually fits with the whole storyline of the Individual 11, the reason why they exist in the first place. This is going to sound totally weird, but there is actually a very strange correlation between the Nicolas Cage Sean Connery movie The Rock and Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex Second Gig.
Okay.
What's the reason for the individual 11 committing their acts of terrorism? They want to draw attention to something that has been overlooked by the government and by various other bodies. Yeah?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What's the reason why Edward Harris takes the action he does in The Rock? He wants to draw attention to something that has been ignored and overlooked by the government and by everybody else.
In Alcatraz.
Well, yeah. No. I mean, all the soldiers going off and fighting in wars that weren't theirs and being killed and not having any benefits paid to their families. Not even being given a honourable discharge from the military.
Yeah.
Do you see what I mean? It's a weird correlation between the two, isn't it? I mean, in the case of the individual of Standalone Complex Second Gig, it's more to do with refugees and stuff like that, which is why it also ties in with Patlabor, the movies.
Right.
And this is the thing. The storyline in this is actually, they've put a lot more thought into it, and it's a lot more socio-political than it is anything else, but it really works on a level that I didn't expect. See, after Standalone Complex, you kind of think, where do you go from here? How can you better Standalone Complex? Then Kenji Kamiyama and Production IG went ahead and did it, didn't they? They basically made a series that's better than Standalone Complex. And then when you put the two of them together, you have 50 plus episodes of just sheer brilliance. And they're all released as one set in the UK now. So I would say if you aren't familiar with Ghost in the Shell Standalone Complex, but you are a fan of cyberpunk, you're a fan of sci-fi, you're a fan of Ghost in the Shell or Akira or anything like that, then you really owe it to yourself to watch Standalone Complex and Second Gig. They will literally make you change how you think about cyberpunk and sci-fi and anime.
I mean, I watched the first half of Standalone Complex like way back when, you know, when they were doing the DVDs, and it was like, you got 4 episodes per DVD.
Yeah.
That's when I watched it, but like I never, ever finished it. And
you should. There are two ways you can watch Standalone Complex. Well, both Standalone Complex and Second Gig. You can basically separate them so you watch the Complex episodes together and have that full storyline, and the Standalone episodes as just individual episodes. So you can watch it that way. Or you can watch it the way it was broadcast. Now, I prefer to watch it the way it was broadcast, which is the way it is on the DVDs. The reason for that is because, and I mentioned this last week as well, nothing is static in the world. Everything is always in constant motion. And one of the great things about Standalone Complex, which a lot of people didn't really get at the time and still don't get now, is that Standalone Complex is reflective of the real world in that you're not going to be so focused on one individual case that you ignore everything else that's happening. I mean, if you look at police officers, they might be working a really serious case, but that doesn't mean to say they won't be pulled onto other cases as well.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why I think it's better just to watch it in the way it's broadcast, in the way it is on the DVDs and Blu-rays, because that kind of gives you a snapshot of the fact that there are other things going on in the world. The major incident in the first one, Laughing Man, second gig was the individual 11. But still, it's just one incident, one overarching, really serious incident, but still just one. And the world still turns. There are still other things that are going on that can be just as important.
And at the end, they can feed in and make it a more complex and rich storyline.
Well, it's world building, isn't it?
It's amazing world building. It's, I'd say Kenji Kamiyama is this, and it's, if you've watched Eden of the East, which he, I believe, also was the director for.
I think so, yeah.
Eden of the East, it's one of my personal like favourites. And the socio-political kind of goings on and that with, I believe it was, because the go-by number was like number one.
Yeah.
That was fantastic.
Well, Eden of the
and
East was
can
also...
See, you can see where that transferred over from his work in Ghost in the Shell.
Thing is, Eden of the East, he actually created it.
So he was the creator and director, huh?
Yeah.
Right, well, it's you can see, like I say, it's the similarities in that, and that's what makes it such a fantastic like piece of work. I mean, like you say, Ghost in the Shell, it was out so long ago, but he's managed to update it and he can make it better. And like I say, Eden of the East, for me, was one of the best ones I've ever watched.
Also, Kenji Kamiyama knows how to make a really good female character, because he was the director of Napping Princess, which had a pretty decent female character. But he's also the director of Guardian of the Sacred Spirit, which has one of the best female characters in anime, in the form of Balsa Yonza. I mentioned Kyoko Mogami from Skip Beat as being one of the best female characters. Yes, she is, easily. If you were making a top 10 of female characters in anime, you would want Kyoko Mogami in there, you'd want Balsa Yonza in there, and you'd want Miyazawa Yukino from His and Her Circumstances in there.
I need to finish that one as well.
The rest of them you can choose whatever you want, but I'd say any top 10 list for best female characters in anime that doesn't have those three characters in probably isn't an accurate list. Anyway, we're getting off the beaten track there. It's interesting because another great female character is Michiko Malandro from Michiko and Hachin, which kind of leads me on to our last bit of news, which we'd ignored up until now. Netflix and Viz have announced an original anime series called Seis Manos. It's set in Mexico in the 1970s, and it's about three orphaned martial arts warriors who join forces with a DEA agent and a Mexican federale to battle for justice after their beloved mentor is murdered on the streets of their tiny border town. And I immediately thought, this sounds like Three Ninjas crossed with Michiko and Hachin.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't know. I can't really comment much on it. It's just like, yeah, they announced it and that was about it. Well, Viz Media's doing it, which is kind of... It says that it's Viz Media's first original animated property.
Yeah.
But to be honest, when I kind of looked at Viz Media's history, that kind of started putting flags up for me.
Yeah.
Because all I could find was Naruto films and Inuyasha films, and personally, neither of them really hold up to kind of anything worth talking about.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of hoping that this is a little bit different and it is actually something worth talking about.
I think it is something worth talking about because the majority of anime that we know is generally set in... Right, if it's a fantasy, it's probably in some European medieval-type world.
Yeah.
If it's a romantic drama, generally it's a school-based thing. Otherwise, it'll be something office-based involving a salaryman or a salarywoman, something like that. If it's sci-fi, most of the time it will involve a school, which is one of the reasons why I like Standalone Complex so much, because there are no schools involved, really. But every so often you get a show that's like Guardian of the Sacred Spirit, where it's... and I forgot the samurai period pieces, right? They're also in there. Guardian of the Sacred Spirit was a bit of an oddity because it was kind of a samurai period piece, but it was also pure fantasy as well. But then you have other shows like El Cazador de la Bruja, which I absolutely adore that show. Michiko and Hachin, which is a show I love. I think that it is one of the finest examples of anime in the last 20-odd years. And so when I hear of a show that's going to be set in South America or in Mexico, something that's way, way outside of the Japanese borders, they're setting it in a different country, in the kind of the way that Stan Lee show, Hero Man, was actually set in America. It wasn't set in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And so, there was the Japanese-isms of it. There was the Japanese dub and everything like that. But it was clearly an American cartoon. It had American characters. And I like it when anime does that. I like it when anime reaches out and tries to cross that international boundary, because it proves to me that the studios are basically looking outward and not being insular.
Yeah, it's certainly, yeah. I mean, another one that was kind of like, that was quite recent, was Violet Evergarden, and that was very not Japanese. What was it? Ancient Magus Bride as well.
Yes, two more recent examples, which are very, 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 very good. I would have preferred it if it was Mexican wrestlers working with the DEA and the Mexican Federale.
We can't have everything, though.
Well, I don't know. If Cristiano Ronaldo could have his own cartoon series, why can't Rey Mysterio?
True.
Tucky, you want to weigh in on this?
I'm not touching Rey Mysterio after last time.
What happened last time?
He was very oily. I've been staying away from wrestling a bit. Backlash was terrible. Chris Jericho has moved over to Japanese wrestling now, which is amazing because he takes off this mask and like the black lipstick and that. He looks like a sad unemployed clown.
Oh, you mean like...
Which is kind of Chris Jericho's thing now.
Hang on. I was going to say, you mean like Sting every day?
I hope Sting listens. I hate him.
Oh, I'm not the Crow. I just look like the Crow.
He should have stuck with Surfer Sting. That's the thing. I loved Sting when he was like the surfer guy with the face paint.
No. I would have given good money to have a match between Surfer Sting and Dude Love.
Yes. Back away from wrestling because I'm.
I've only seen Sting wrestle one match, and that was against a very drugged up Jeff Hardy. And I wouldn't even call him that wrestling. That was just him just knocking Jeff Hardy out and just being like, yeah, you're too drugged up.
Normal Tuesday evening for Jeff then.
Yeah. Well, we're not...
He's pulled it back.
has he really? Or is he just sculling on the waters of insanity, but from the other side?
I don't know. The whole Matt Hardy thing's fun as out.
That's Matt, not Jeff, though.
The thing is, I'd love to get inside their brain and just see how it all works. It's probably all weird shapes and all sorts of stuff like that.
Oh, Jeff's definitely in on it. Yeah. The thing is, I'll tell you what, I would pay money for Netflix to like drop down all this Boss Baby stuff, drop down all the crap stuff, and focus all on one animated series and have it start around Matt Hardy's life.
Is it going to be like Camp WWE?
Oh, now, that's a thing. Camp WWE's got a second season, which has just been released.
Oh, God. I think I'm going to have to watch this.
It took me for next week.
they bring it out every week, and I've only seen, like, the first episode where John Cena wishes upon a star, and the star, like, duplicates John Cena. And then there's lots of, like, daft cutaways. Like, Ric Flair is the most oversexed man in existence.
Yeah, I just love Stone Cold's automatic reaction to everything.
It's absolutely bonkers. Like Big Show is getting picked on because he can't tie his shoes.
Yeah. No, seriously, Camp WWE is more fun than WWE. It's an oddball zany cartoon series.
By far, this new one is like, oh, it's the funniest thing I've ever seen. And I've just seen Ric Flair hump out a fire. Ric Flair humped out a house fire.
Yes. Anyway, as weird and trippy as it is, it's not as weird and trippy as what Mark's got.
Oh, I was really hoping that we were going to get some kind of drug-fueled segue into this. Yeah, a few weeks ago, I watched Mind Game.
Are you sure you watched Mind Game? Are you sure Mind Game didn't watch you?
Oh. I don't know. It's basically, I mean, to give it the elevator pitch, it's basically Magic Roundabout on acid.
Hang on, Magic Roundabout was already on acid.
Yeah, Zebedee said boing quite a lot.
This is even more so. But, yeah, Mind Game is basically Masaki Yuasa's what he cut his teeth on before he made it big over the last few years.
Sorry, when you say that like that, I'm thinking... So Masaki Yuasa, while he's directing, he's just sitting there filing his teeth into points so he can bite chunks out of the voice actors.
I wouldn't be surprised if he at least attempted that with this this film. Honestly, it's just so, so trippy. And there is a plot. It's about an hour and a half, but there actually is a very, very thin plot in the film.
I remember when I watched this, I vaguely remember it's about a guy... He's got something to do with comic books. I know he's like 20 or so, something like that. And he runs into a girl he used to like, and then it gets weird after that.
Yeah, he runs into a girl who he's always liked, and he's kind of just like trying to hit on her. And she turns around and is like, oh, well, I've already proposed to this other guy. You're not cool enough. She actually considers him to be a wimp. And then they meet the fiancé and he actually accepts him as a nice person. He's just like, oh, actually, you are actually like the perfect husband for this girl. And then they encounter a group of Yakuza and it kind of all kicks off from there. They flee from the Yakuza, and they just pick up her sister along the way. I can't even remember how that kind of happens. And then they just end up in this wheel, and they meet this old man inside a wheel. And that's like the first like half hour, and like the last like 60 minutes of the film is just like as much acid as you can handle, really. It's just like,
I remember a weird bit from there. Didn't somebody get shot in the arse?
Yeah, one of the characters gets shot in the arse. it's just like one of those films. It's like, I watched the whole thing, and that is essentially the story.
Yeah, no, Tucky, when I say shot in the arse, I don't mean shot in the butt, right? I mean the gun is basically pointed at his anus.
Oh, yeah. I know that pain. If you ever go playing paintball with an American, prepare for to be hit square on the ring piece.
But yeah, it's like I said, that is the main part of the story. There is all of these other little segments where they kind of bond together and the bond of this old man, but it's just nonsense, honestly.
I've just remembered how that bit ends with him being shot in the anus. I'm having weird, right? Sometimes when you go through life, you try certain things as you go through life, especially when you go to university. And so I've experienced certain flashbacks, but now I'm having one of those moments that's very similar, because Mind Game is a bit like that. I can confirm this. And my thought has literally been, right, okay, I'm starting to remember a bit more of it. Oh no, there was a guy who got shot in the butt. No, he got shot in the arse.
It's one of those films that you can sit and you can watch it, and then you can like just like come out of it and just be like, I don't even remember anything that had happened in that film.
No, but you will.
And then it just starts hitting you over the course of like a few days later, a few weeks later, a few years later. You're just like, what was that?
Because I've just remembered how the arse thing finishes. Doesn't he come back to life or something and then grab the gun in his butt and then shoot the guy who's trying to shoot him?
Yeah, he basically reincarnates himself.
He reincarnates himself, uses his buttocks to grab the gun that's pointed at his anus, and then shoots the guy who's trying to shoot him in the arse.
So hang on, where there? He shoots a gun from his arse with his arse. How does his arse pull the trigger?
I don't know.
Has he got some kind of like prolapsed hook?
I have no idea.
Via the power of anime, it worked. I mean, can you remember the sex scene that was in it? There is an absolutely bonkers sex scene.
I have to say, it's a really seldom to us, eh?
I've got to say, it
makes Belladonna of Sadness look pretty sane.
Let me put it this way. You've watched some of Masaki Yuasa's stuff. You've watched Nighty Short Walk On Girl. You've watched Lou Over the Wall. What else have you watched from Masaki Yuasa? Devilman Crybaby, yeah?
Yeah.
Have you watched Kaiba?
Can't remember. Doesn't ring a bell, actually.
I don't think it's ever been legally released over here for Kaiba. Okay. I think that's the only one that we're missing.
I think it's a shame, because Kaiba is a great series. Tatami Galaxy, have you watched that?
Yes.
Ping Pong the Animation?
Yes.
Kemonozume?
I haven't.
Okay.
I've watched Space Dandy.
All right, okay, you watched Space Dandy. Okay, right. So you've basically watched a lot of his work. Mind Game is nothing like any of them.
Yeah, it's like it's definitely on its own little world of its own.
I often say this to people when they ask me what Mind Game is like, and my response is literally the same every single time. You won't understand Mind Game until you watch Mind Game, and it's basically, imagine you had a mad scientist. And they basically wanted to create life, but they didn't want to use human body parts. They wanted to use animation.
All right.
Right.
So it's like a Frankenstein-ish acid trip.
Yes. That was something I was going to bring up about the animation, is that the animation style in it just jumps all over the place. I mean, imagine something that kind of starts off like an animation style, like similar to Tatami Galaxy or Night is Short. But then all of a sudden it just randomly jumps into Ping Pong the Animation.
Do you know what?
It jumps into Devilman Crybaby's animation. Then it just jumps all over between all of Masaki Uwasa's various styles that he's had over the things. Like low over the wall animation style, it just jumps between all of them for every single scene.
Best description. You know that YouTube clip about the kid who's on his way home from the dentist and he's still drugged up?
And we're talking about me right now.
No. You'll have seen it. You know, it's a famous YouTube clip about a kid in the
back. He's had too much aesthetic and he's like, what is life or something else.
Yeah. Imagine you were an anime director and you were under the same influence at that point and you made a film. That film that you made was probably Mind Game.
All right.
Would you say that was fair, Mark?
Yeah, I would. I mean, honestly, it's like you said, it's one of those films. I mean, it's up there. It's kind of, I'm ranking this along with stuff like Belladonna Osiris or Momotaro Sacred Sailors, where it's such a unique piece that I would recommend everybody who is serious into anime or animation to just watch it, because it's like it's nothing like ever. You'll never see it again, or you haven't seen anything like it, because it's just that insane.
I actually have to agree with you on this. The weird thing is, there are very few films in anime that I would say, or very few things in anime that I would say you don't watch, you experience. One of them is Barefoot Gen.
Yeah.
Barefoot Gen, you don't watch. Grave of the Fireflies, you can watch. Grave of the Fireflies is a movie that you watch. Barefoot Gen isn't a movie you watch. Barefoot Gen is a movie you experience.
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest difference between the two. And Mind Game is kind of the same. Mind Game isn't a movie you watch. Mind Game is a movie you experience. It is like an assault on your senses and on your brain. And you probably will have a headache about a third of the way into watching it. And then maybe about halfway. And then close to the end again, you'll probably have another headache. And then when you're done, you'll probably just kind of close your eyes for 5 minutes and go.
It's one like, you know, where Tatami Galaxy, like, it was very, very fast paced.
Yeah.
And you kind of do have to rewatch it a few times to kind of get every single thing that happened in it.
Yeah.
It's very much like that. You can't just watch Mind Game once. You've got to watch it. I mean, I couldn't watch this over and over again, one after another. I would have to watch it, give it a few weeks to let it sink in, then watch it again. I mean, I watched it again last night to kind of refresh myself on what happened. And it was just like, yeah, I'm still kind of like, oh yeah, forgot about that.
Yeah.
Forgot about that.
There's a great series that I want to recommend alongside Mind Game. And if you're in for a psychedelic night in,
I'm in for that. I like a bit of psychedelic at home.
All right, then watch Mind Game, watch Kaiba, because Kaiba is weird as well, and also watch Trapeze. Trapeze is directed by Kenji Nakamura, and it's a weird series. I think it's adapted from a novel, and it's all about the psychiatric ward of the Irabu General Hospital. It also goes by the name of Kuchi Buranko and Welcome to Irabu's Office. At the psychiatric ward of the General Hospital, you have a trapeze artist suffering from insomnia after suddenly failing his jumps, a gangster afraid of knives and sharp objects, and a businessman who has an erection 24 hours a day.
I'm sure in London, there's a psychiatric office with them exact people in.
Yeah, they're getting counselling from Dr. Ichiro Irabu, who is the childlike son of the hospital director. His assistant is the sullen-faced, sexy nurse Mayumi. With his mysterious injections and advice that does not make sense, Dr. Irabu confuses his patients, but at the end of his unique treatments, the patients are led to digging further into their souls to find peace of mind.
How can you dig into your soul to cure a non-stop erection? How does that work?
I don't know.
So is this something Pelé should have done before he embarrassed himself with them adverts?
No, but it's something Bonatitan should definitely have done before going to Doki Doki that year.
Anyways, yes, Mind Game. It's certainly something, and I would definitely recommend you buy it. I mean, to be honest, they've actually released it for pretty cheap. I think it's like $13.99 or something on Blu-ray, and it's like,
see, that's a bargain.
That's like a bargain. I mean, that's cheaper than paying for two people to see Infinity Wars. And I'll tell you what, you'll get a lot more out of this.
No, you won't.
Controversial.
No, you won't. No, you won't. You won't. You won't get more out of Mind Game than Infinity Wars. You will get something different. See, Infinity Wars promises a lot and delivers on a lot of things. It doesn't deliver on everything. Whereas Mind Game promises a lot and gives you cheese.
No, Mind Game doesn't really promise you anything. You just kind of look at it and says, Mind Game. You look at the box and say, like, what the hell?
So I say, walking into a pharmacist asking for paracetamol and they give you a Carambeur.
Oh,
a Camembert, yeah.
I think, how is this going to solve my headache? Well, it's cheese. Just eat it.
I kind of feel like Tucky actually needs to see the actual cover for the...
No, sir, I can see the cover. It looks like one of them ascetic meme things.
Yeah, Tucky doesn't need to watch the cover. Tucky needs to sit down and watch Mind Game properly. And if he doesn't watch it before Sonny, then I vote that we contact... It's Anime Limited who have the license for it, isn't it?
Yeah.
I vote that we contact Anime Limited and we say, we want to film Tucky watching Mind Game at SonnyCon. Right?
Oh, you can't do that. We don't have a screening room anymore. We're Don't worry.
I didn't say everybody else gets to watch it, did I, Tucky? I said, we want to film Tucky watching Mind Game at SonnyCon. So,
I don't think Donald Light is going away for more than 2 hours. The whole thing would fall apart.
What do you think, man? I think it's a good idea.
The thing is, it's like, take us away, put us to the side. I go and watch this for like, how long is it? Hour and a half?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Watching something psychedelic and then walking into a convention that's on fire.
That's thinking
like this is normal, yeah.
Damn it, he's on to me.
Anyway,
yeah, we're actually at the end of the show there, so we're going to leave you for this week. All of our shows are available on Apple Podcasts and Audioboom and our website, thegeekshow.co.uk, where you'll find all sorts of other stuff and all of the other shows on the Geek Show Podcast Network. You'll also find our shop, which has some lovely, tasty wares, and also our Patreon as well. So show your support by buying something or sending some funds our way. If you want to get in touch with us, you can find us on Facebook or on our own Twitter, which is, Mark?
@ Keyframe Podcast.
Or you can email us, studio@thegeekshow.co.uk. That's it for this week. We will be back next week with a more normal show, I assume, hope. Pray.
It's never normal here.
Yes. Until then, I've been Rob.
I've been Mark.
And I've been Tucky. I've been Tucky. He's been Tucky. And I've been Tucky. And that's been Tucky. And there's Tucky over there. That Tucky's on the toilet. I'm not going to disturb him.
We'll see you all later.
Bye.